You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The following video is a conversation on how race is represented in Jagged Little Pill through the lens of transracial adoption. Lead producer Arvind Ethan David discusses this issue with Impact Board advisor Angela Tucker, founder of the organization The Adopted Life. Joining them is performer Celia Rose Gooding, whose character in Jagged Little Pill is a transracial adoptee in a white family living in a predominantly white, affluent suburb.
Hello, everyone. I'm Arvind Ethan David. I'm one of the lead producers of Jagged Little Pill, and I'm really excited and charged to have this conversation today with the star, Tony nominee, Celia Rose Gooding, who plays Frankie in our show. Hey, Celia.
Super, super happy to be here. Really, really honored to be a part of this conversation. I'm very excited.
And also with Angela Tucker, who's one of our board of advisors, and who's also an expert on transracial adoption. Angela, hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
So before we get into it, and before we specifically start talking around the issues of race that are central to one of the storylines of Jagged Little Pill, central to your character, Celia Frankie, who is a Black girl adopted to a white family in a white community. But before we get into that, let me just ask each of you, today, with all this happening, and I didn't even mention the epidemic. I didn't even mention suspension of Broadway. I didn't, you know, the list is too long, but what are the emotions and thoughts at the top of each of your minds today, just today at this minute? Celia, let's go to you first.
I feel like something that Jagged has taught me is to control the controllable. A lot of the stimuli that Frankie receives, it's an overwhelming life Frankie has been navigating. And I think within that, I've been sort of learning how to like receive a lot of information, digest it, compartmentalize it into like what I can focus on, what is the thing that I actually have control over, and what's just really, really scary. And I think a lot of the stimuli I'm receiving is really, really scary and things that I feel like I want to have more control over, but I can't. And so the emotion at the top of my list is just, I don't even know how to like describe it, as like just balancing and just trying to navigate, like, what can I actually focus on and what can I put my energy towards that can fulfill me and can also do what I feel is right. And so that is phone banking, and that is reaching out to my family members and saying, hey, do you have a voting plan? It's talking to my friends and saying, hey, how are you doing? Tell me something good that's happened today. It's keeping the news on, keeping the notifications around, but also being able to turn it off and say, I'm hearing this headline for the seventh time in a row. I've seen the brutality. I know what this is. I can turn it off and not feel like I'm shutting out the world. It's being kind to myself, but also staying aware, which is a balancing act, especially this year.
Angela, how are you today? What are the emotions on the top of your mind today?
I am like laser focused on supporting all of the adopted youth that I mentor, specifically the transracial adopted youth. I speak with about 30 youth who are between the ages of 12 and 20 on a monthly basis, some of them individuals, some in groups. But these are youth, much like Frankie's character, who are people of color, raised by white parents. And the ones that I'm really specifically focused on during this wild time are those whose parents are Trump voters, those Black kids whose parents are parenting through like a colorblind approach. I have a few youth that I'm mentoring who have wanted to go out and protest and wanted to shout Black Lives Matter, and their parents don't believe that. Their parents believe that they matter. Their parents love them, their children, their adopted child, but don't believe that Black Lives Matter. And they may be saying it in really subliminal messaging types of ways. And so these youth are on my brain all the time. I love meeting with them, but it's really a time when transracial adoptees, especially those with parents who are don't get it, need a lot of support. So I've been really focused on that. I love it. I'm so grateful for Zoom and for being able to connect virtually with these kids all over the country, because transracial adoptees are really a silent minority, as we can talk about a little bit through Frankie's character. So that's where I am.
It must be, because we all know, either as parents or as children, that there's always a gap. There's a generational gap between us and our parents. There's often a cultural gap, a societal gap, if you're either adopted or even if you're from a biracial family. There's all sorts of gaps that open up in understanding and sympathy, even when there's enormous love. And what you're describing is sort of a very extreme case of that. And I'm wondering, how do you help them navigate this without undermining the love that they must feel for their parents and their parents must feel for? Like, how do you go, hey, I know your dad loves you, but on this one, he's wrong. Like, how does one manage that? And as you answer that, I find myself wondering, what if Frankie had someone like you to talk to in the story? Like, how would that have played out? That would have been really interesting.
On my end, I'm not undermining parents' love when I'm working with youth. But it is interesting for me to help the youth figure out why it is that they haven't felt safe or comfortable to tell their parents exactly what they feel, which for many adopted youth, transracial adopted youth, include actually also transracially adopted adults too. And this is partly because of the media representation and like the oppression of our voices within transracial narratives on the screen or in theater. But this is a really common experience for these youth to say to me, I know my parents love me, and that's why I don't want to tell them that I feel like an imposter, or I feel like I have my foot in two worlds, that I'm like, I don't want to tell them that my friends say that I am an Oreo, that I'm Black on the outside but white on the inside. I don't want to tell them that because I know they love me and I don't want to hurt their feelings. They also they're also actively avoiding abandonment again. So adoptees, we've already been abandoned once. And so the thought from a lot of these youth is that if I tell my parents this truth, then I might freak them out so much that they will be like in tears or elicit some emotion that to our bodies sometimes feels like rejection or abandonment. And so that's actually a really interesting crux, is like knowing they love us, yet their actions don't reflect a love for our whole community and people. And that is said by things like, you're going to go to this school, or we're going to live in a predominantly white city because it's safer. Mm-hmm. You know, so like they're hearing two messages like, okay, you love me, but you don't love my people. So I'm really confused. You're raising me to assimilate to whiteness, and you're acting like whiteness is the status quo. But at the same time, like, I look in the mirror and I don't look like you. And so that is the crux that we're talking about in these mentorship sessions that I have with the youth.
The amount of energy, processing energy it takes to question the very context in which you have grown and been formed.
Yes.
And to reinterpret yourself in the light of that. And I think helping someone do that is almost a definition of what being a mentor is. So all power to you. Celia, would Frankie have benefited from an Angela at the end of a Zoom through the story of Jagged Little Pill?
Let me think about that. Yes. Yes. Celia benefited from having an Angela. Absolutely. So I even as someone who has been raised by their biological parents, it's the same thing. It's about understanding the context of where you grow up. I have a very large Black community in my family, but I also have been raised, I went to predominantly white schools for the majority of my childhood. All my friends were white. A lot of my cousins who don't live in predominantly white neighborhoods would always kind of pick on me and say that I've been called an Oreo before. This isn't new information. And so Frankie, I used to, in the lab portion of when we were working on Jagged, I always thought about, like, what if Frankie had a therapy scene? What if Frankie had a moment with a Black woman therapist and just had an outpouring of, like, there's so much that I'm dealing with and I can't share this with my parents. One, because they don't get it. Two, because they really wouldn't get it. And three, because I don't really even understand what this is. I just feel like right. I'm constantly trying to prove myself. I'm constantly trying to feel worthy of love, worthy of attention, worthy of space, worthy of listening to. And just if Frankie had a moment to sort of like expel all of that, not right before she runs away to New York, maybe, but in a place where like she saw herself a little bit more.
Right. Yeah. And one of the things I think about, you know, I'm not a therapist. I'm a mentor and a transracial adoptee. I have this lived experience having been raised by white people in a predominantly white city, thousands of miles from where my birth family is. I was born in Tennessee and raised in Washington State up near the Canadian border. But one of the most freeing conversations that if Frankie had the ability to speak with someone like myself or something like that, is this feeling of like finally being able to understand that adoption isn't just the most amazing thing in the world, like what the media and the narratives typically have been around mm-hmm. transracial, transnational adoption. The narratives have really come from the perspective of the adoptive parents and like everyone except for the adoptees. And that narrative has been like, you should just be so grateful that you were adopted. Your parents are incredible for doing this. And so for Frankie, for myself, having a space to be like, you know, what is so wrong with me that I needed a saint to adopt me?
Or what was so wrong about my living situation? Or what was so wrong about
like my birth parents?
Exactly. I think where Frankie navigates from is this point of like, what was so special about me that you could choose me then? But now as I grow and I adopt more personality traits that do not reflect you and what you yes. prefer, why aren't you choosing me now? Why are now you telling me that I have to change and contort into something that is definitely not me? Where's the disconnect? Am I yes. not enough to be chosen anymore? Like what
right. do you that so many adoptive parents like Mary Jane and Steve, they adopt this cute little Black baby that doesn't have opinions yet, even though we know from research that for adoptees, there is a primal wound when we're separated from our first parents, but that goes unnoticed. So we may be like crying out inside, but we don't have the language to say like, what? This is like culture shock. You just plucked me from here to there, but you love me so much. But yeah, once an adoptee grows and is like, actually, like this adoption thing is kind of weird, or like, why wouldn't you support my birth parents to keep me instead of just plucking me and then raising me? And, you know, it's like, once that happens, then Mary Jane and Steve are like, yeah, Frankie, you've got too much attitude. Like, you know, why are you wearing that? Why are you taking on all these other causes? You know, that sort of not understanding you is so confusing.
When we first came to you and said, hey, will you consult to us? Like, what did you think? What were your, both about just the prospects in general of doing something like this? I don't know if you had done it before for other shows.
finally felt like, is this an opening to where media is finally understanding that the experts of the adoption experience are the adoptees themselves? Is media finally coming to grips with the fact that this like rags to riches fairy tale narrative of adoption is actually hurting adoptees, and that putting money towards ensuring accurate representation of our identities is going to like save us? And I'm not being extreme in the sense that one in four adoptees who seek therapy are attempting suicide right now. This is a stat from the American Academy of Pediatrics. And this is because the media has so long convoluted our stories to ways that felt like we were being gaslit. Like, it just didn't make, and so for Jagged Little Pill to reach out and be like, we want to do this right. We want to get it right. I have all these youth who I want to bring to the show because they will be able for like the first time to be like, I see myself represented up there. I know now that like my feelings are real. I'm real. I exist. I don't need to hide. I mean, it's hard to overstate the importance of Jagged deciding to put money towards accuracy here. It's something that we have not had.
One of the big issues of the moment, of course, in the creative world is representation. And we were acutely aware that even though we have, you know, a pretty diverse creative team and a producerial team, there obviously wasn't somebody with specific experience of transracial adoption, and there wasn't a Black person in the lead creative team. And something that we discussed very early when Diablo had this idea, Diablo is the most empathetic and extraordinary writer. And of course, as an artist, we all want to say, hey, as an artist, we have the right to dream anything. We have the right to write anything. We have the right, you know, that's the artist's responsibility and right. At the same time, you have to get it right. And so I remember the day Diablo had this idea, and she called me and she said, look, I think it's a good idea dramatically. I think it will reveal character in a fascinating way and tell an interesting story, but I don't know if I have the right to do it. And like, she had that thought right at the top of the creative process. She's like, I don't know if I have the right to get inside this issue. And yeah. She's like, I'm comfortable talking about addiction. She has addiction in her family. I'm comfortable talking about being a woman and sexual assault. There are experiences that she has earned. And this one, and I said, and just to get personal, I said, listen, it's important to get it right. We will get it right. We'll bring in the resource to get it right.
And I think for Frankie, or for me as an actor trying to give as much justice to Frankie as possible, I think what was so freeing for me is to be able to like talk to Angela and say, hey, I have no idea what I'm doing. Is there, like, just tell me everything. Are there books I can read? Are there podcasts I can listen to? Are there more people I can speak to? Like, what can I do? What is everything we can do to make sure that we represent this person who we don't know very well, but love very deeply? So much of my life has grown with, and like, I've intersected with Frankie's experience many times, and we have informed each other on so many levels. I have never been more confident in myself than learning how to be confident in Frankie. Like, it just, I'm grateful for her. She's grateful for me. We're both grateful for y'all. It was definitely just like a cosmic deep thing of like the universe giving me this lesson about myself as I continue to grow and learn and inform. And then I can turn around and inform a whole bunch of other people, inform Black women, inform queer women, inform adoptees. And I'm not even an adoptee. Like, it's just, I've been given so much to inform others and inform myself because I'm growing and also learn. It's incredible, all of it.
Well, it's so wonderful to hear you say that and reflect on it. It's been a real privilege to watch that happen. As you've both so eloquently put, of its importance, kind of, yes, it's crucially important to specifically transracial adoptees. But the thing I felt throughout this conversation is how much that experience has to teach everyone else. How the experience of being bifurcated and contingent and containing these conflicting multitudes really is a position that we should all be so lucky to learn from, because we all are that. It's just that transracial adoptees are in extremis. We all contain multitudes. We all come from places of different identities, but we don't, too many people can conveniently ignore that, and a transracial adoptee cannot. And in a way, that's that, if there's a thing about Jagged that it tries to do, it tries to say, don't ignore any truth, however inconvenient, however.
And however many truths there are, what you said earlier at the beginning about like the reviews that we got saying that we tackle too much. Welcome to the brain space of a transracial adoptee, to a Black queer woman, to an addict, to a survivor. There's a lot that's happening just because you have had the blissful experience of a simple existence. That does not mean that those who have had complexities do not deserve the opportunity to have their complexities shown in fullness.
Society is ready for that. Like, let's be more realistic, because even those who think that they had maybe simple lives are seeing themselves in the complexities here. And I'm like, we're ready. Let's do this. Like, media, entertainment, we can handle it. That's exciting to me.
We're ready. They're ready. Let's go. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So good to talk to you.
Thank you.